Fall of Constantinople in 1453. Final preparations by the city of Constantinople. On this Monday, May the 28th, 1453, with the knowledge that the crisis was upon them, the soldiers and citizens forgot their quarrels. While the men at the walls worked to repair the shattered defenses, a great procession was formed. In contrast to the silence in the Turkish camp, in the city, the bells of the churches rang, and their wooden gongs sounded as icons and relics were brought out upon the shoulders of the faithful and carried round through the streets and all along the length of the walls, pausing to bless with their holy presence the spots where the damage was the greatest and the danger the most pressing. The throng that followed behind them, Greeks, Italians, Orthodox, Catholics, sang hymns and repeated the Kyrie eleison. The emperor himself came to join the procession, and when it ended, he summoned his notables and commanders, Greek and Italian, and spoke to them. His speech was recorded by two men present, his secretary, Ferrantes, and the Archbishop of Mytilene. Each of them wrote down the emperor's speech in his own way, adding pedantic allusions and pious aphorisms to give it a rhetorical form that in all probability it lacked. But their accounts agree sufficiently for us to know its substance. Constantine told his hearers that the great assault was about to begin. To his Greek subjects, he said that a man should always be ready to die either for his faith or for his country or for his family or for his sovereign. Now his people must prepare to die for all four causes. He spoke of the glories and the high traditions of the great imperial city. He spoke of the perfidy of the infidel sultan who had provoked the war in order to destroy the true faith and to put his false prophet in the seat of Christ. He urged them to remember that they were the descendants of the heroes of ancient Greece and Rome, and to be worthy of their ancestors. For his part, he said he was ready to die for his faith, his city, and his people. He then turned to the Italians, thanking them for the great services that they had rendered, and telling them of his trust in them for the fighting that was to come. He begged them all, Greek and Italians alike, not to fear the vast numbers of the enemy and the barbarous devices of fires and noise designed to alarm them. Let their spirits be high. Let them be brave, steadfast. With the help of God, they would be victorious. All that were present rose to assure the emperor that they were ready to sacrifice their lives and their homes for him, and then walked slowly round the chamber, asking each one of them forgive him if he had caused offense. They followed his example, embracing one another, as men do who expect to die. Actually, this is a custom in the Orthodox Church that occurs every year, where the entire church has a penance service, where you go one to the other and saying, forgive me if I have harmed you, and they ask in return, forgive me also. It's quite moving. At any rate, the day was nearly over. Already crowds were moving towards the great church of the Holy Wisdom. For the past 5 months, no pious Greek had stepped through its portals to hear the sacred liturgy defiled by Latins and by renegades. But on that evening, the bitterness was ended. Barely a citizen, except for the soldiers on the wall, stayed away from this desperate service of intercession. Priests who held union with Rome to be a mortal sin now came to the altar to serve their Unionist brothers. The cardinal was there, besides him bishops who would never acknowledge his authority. And all the people came to make confession, take communion, not caring whether Orthodox or Catholic administered it. There were Italians, Catalans, along with the Greeks. The golden mosaic studded with the images of Christ and his saints and the emperors and the empresses of Byzantium glimmered in the light of 1,000 lamps and candles, and beneath them, for the last time, the priests in their splendid vestments moved in the solemn rhythm of the liturgy. At this moment, there was union in the Church of Constantinople. When the emperor's council was dismissed, the ministers and the commanders rode through the city to join in the worship. After confessing and taking communion, each then went to his station, resolved to conquer or die. When Giustiniani and his Greek and Italian comrades came to their allotted places and passed through the inner wall to the outer wall and the stockade, orders were given for the gates of the inner wall to be closed behind them. There might be no retreat. Later in the evening, the emperor himself rode on his Arab mare to the great cathedral and made his peace with God. Then he returned through the dark streets to his palace at the Bacchanai and summoned his household. Of them, as he had done with his ministers, he asked forgiveness for any unkindness that he might have shown them and bade them goodbye. was close on midnight when he mounted his horse again and rode, accompanied by his faithful Physantius, down the length of the land walls to see that everything was in order and that the gates through the inner wall were closed. On their way back to the Bacchanae, the emperor dismounted near the Caligarian gate and took Physantius up to a tower, the outmost angle of the Bacchanae wall, from which they could peer out into the darkness both ways, across to the Mastuchion on the left, down to the Golden Horn on the right. Below them they could hear the noises as the enemy brought their guns over the filled-in fosse. This activity had been going on since sunset, so the watchman told them. In the distance, they could see flickering lights as the Turkish ships moved across the Golden Horn. Byzantius waited with his master for an hour or so, and then Constantine dismissed him. They never been again. The battle was now beginning. Now, where they are standing is one of the weakest positions in the wall system, because when you come down towards the Golden Horn and you have the Bacchanae Palace, they do not have the gigantic multi-level gates. Putting that palace in there made it weaker. So you have the main wall, and that's it. And once you open that gate to that main wall and go out and fight, you have to come back and make sure you close that. Whereas on the others, they've closed the back gates, so the people fighting in the first two lines of defenses can't withdraw. So you still have the big wall at the back that's available for protection, but you don't have those three defenses down at the Bacchanae wall where it meets the other one. And that's going to be a crucial point. Well, we're coming up on one of the greatest slugfests in history. The Turks with their massive guns, tremendous troops, not all of them very well trained. The Bashi Bazooks are just basically cannon fodder. Or the Ghazi cavalry are good cavalry, but it's useless against fortifications. So they're going to have to dismount. The real professionals are the Janissaries. And they don't have unlimited numbers of them, so they have to be sparingly used. You'll reach a point in this battle where it requires a little bribery to get the Janissaries to go into action. It is not a foregone conclusion. We know how it's going to end. But the battle goes back and forth and back and forth. And Mehmed has as much to lose as Constantine. Because if he is unsuccessful, and he believes that if he is unsuccessful in taking the city, at this massive effort, his own men will overthrow him, and it'll be his last day on earth, and there'll be a new sultan. Now, the sources for this, same ones that I've been using. Short History of Byzantium by Norwich. Fall of Constantinople, 1453 by Runciman. Byzantine Art of War by Decker. Byzantine Armies, 325 to 1453 by Belazos. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.